Revolution in the Republic of Texas is what I'm going to talk to you about today. In 1832, June 26th, the first bloodshed of the Texas Revolution took place at Velasco, when Texans transporting a cannon from Brazoria to Anahuac are challenged by Mexican forces at Velasco. The Mexicans surrendered on June 29th because the Texans said, "You ain't taking our gun." In 1835, notice how things start small and then they accelerate into critical mass. There was a lot of grumbling, a lot of diplomatic trips to Mexico City, to Saltillo, Coahuila, where our capital was, and places like that. Been there several times, as a matter of fact, and you've got to go out of your way to get there. And that was part of the problem, especially on horseback. 1835, on October 2nd, the Mexican troops attempted to retrieve a cannon that had been given to Gonzales to protect them from Indian attacks. The skirmish that ensued as Gonzales residents dared the Mexicans to what? Come and take it. It's considered the opening battle of the Texas Revolution. Now you understand why the Second Amendment, the National Rifle Association, and the Texas State Rifle Association are part of my life. Almost all wars are presaged, almost every one of them in history, with gun registration and confiscation by the government. 1835 on November, we skip from October to November 1st, and this is when people were getting upset. So they had what they called a consultation, so they wouldn't get arrested. Convened at San Felipe on November 7th, the delegates agreed to establish a provisional government, in which case they are now open targets for arrest. Then in 1835, moving into November, how quickly this happens. November 1st, now November 8th, the grass fight near San Antonio was won by Texans under Jim Bowie and Ed Burleson. Now, in case those of you that aren't from Texas think we get a little too proud of ourselves, well, I have to share the grass fight with you. Toward the end of November 1835, it was reported to Texans around San Antonio that a shipment of silver was coming from Mexico. According to the report, the silver was being transported on a train of pack mules on its way to pay the soldiers of Mexican General Cos, who occupied the town. The Texan scouts kept close watch for the convoy so the payload might be intercepted. On the morning of 28 November, Erastus, of course we know him as Death Smith, while on patrol, discovered some mules with packs approaching, supposing this to be the mule train. He reported the discovery to the Texan camp under Jim Bowie. The camp was first to intercept the mule train, and a skirmish began. As reinforcements under Colonel Ed Burleson arrived, the fight was well underway. The Texans pursued as the enemy dispersed, thus ending the celebrated grass fight. The Mexicans abandoned their mules as they fled. However, the Texans soon found the packs were filled with grass rather than the expected silver. As the Texans later learned from their captives, the Mexicans had gone out the night before to gather grass to feed their horses. The Texans lost a man and two wounded during the fight, and the Mexican loss was much larger. And just remember, when you hear the headlines of today, how important intelligence has always been in warfare. Then we get very rapidly to the very important part where people pledge their lives, stand up for what they believe. The Texans, March 2nd, we're just moving from November, and there were a lot of skirmishes, and then over the Christmas time, over that time, we moved, and remember these people lived out in the prairie, on horseback and everything else, and it gets cold, as you can remember, this winter, even down in South Texas. The Texas Declaration of Independence was produced literally overnight, immediately upon the assemblage of the convention in 1836 on March 1st. A committee of its five delegates were appointed to draft the document. The committee consisted of George Childress, you recognize all these counties and city names, Edward Conrad, James Gaines, Bailey Hardiman, and Colin McKinney, prepared the declaration in record time. It was briefly reviewed, then adopted by the delegates of the convention to the following day. And if you've never been to Washington-on-Brazos State Park, go. It's been renovated, and it's just absolutely beautiful. The document parallels somewhat that of the United States, signed almost 60 years earlier, and contains statements on the function and responsibility of government, followed by a list of grievances. Finally, it concludes by declaring Texas a free and independent republic. And it's good that you be reminded of some of the things it said. It reads in part, "When a government has ceased to protect the lives, liberty, and property of the people from whom its legitimate powers are derived, and for the advancement of whose happiness it was instituted, and so far from being a guarantee for the enjoyment of those inestimable and inalienable rights becomes an instrument in the hands of evil rulers for their oppression. When the federal Republican Constitution of their country, which they have sworn to support, no longer has a substantial existence, and the whole nature of their government has been forcibly changed without their consent, the right of self-preservation, the inherent and inalienable rights of the people to appeal to first principles and take their political affairs into their own hands in extreme cases, enjoins it as a right towards themselves and a sacred obligation to their posterity to abolish such government and create another in its stead, calculated to rescue them from impending dangers and to secure their future welfare and happiness. A statement of a part of our grievances is therefore submitted to an impartial world in justification of the hazardous but unavoidable step now taken of severing our political connection with the Mexican people and assuming an independent attitude among the nations of the earth. The Mexican government, by its colonization laws, invited and induced the Anglo-American population of Texas to colonize its wilderness under a pledged faith of a written constitution, that they should continue to enjoy that constitutional liberty and republican government to which they had been habituated in the land of their birth in the United States of America. And let me add to you, when we started fighting, we were fighting for the restoration of that constitution in Mexico, not for independence. The Battle of Alamo began before this constitution was written, and it was to preserve the 1824 Constitution of Mexico, which Santa Anna had destroyed. And my wife, many of you know, is from Mexico, and I visited the schools there. I don't believe some of this stuff you hear. In Mexico, they teach Santa Anna as a great embarrassment and terrible, terrible thing that happened. They don't, some people have said they celebrate all that and say how Texas is wrong. No, they don't. I've read the textbooks. The guy suspended the Constitution and took power. That's all there was to it. In this expectation, they've been cruelly disappointed, inasmuch as the Mexican nation has acquiesced in the latest change made in government by General Antonio López de Santa Anna, who, having overturned the constitution of his country, now offers us a cruel alternative: either to abandon our homes acquired by so many privations, or submit to the most intolerable of all tyranny, the combined despotism of the sword and the priesthood. It has failed and refused to secure on a firm basis the right of trial by jury, that palladium of civil liberty, and only safe guarantee for life, liberty, and the property of the citizens. By the way, your city's embarking on the same course with civil fines for red light cameras and no trial by jury. Sorry. It has dissolved by force of arms the state Congress of Coahuila and Texas and obliged our representatives to fly for their lives from the seat of government, thus depriving us of the fundamental political right of representation. It has demanded us to deliver up our arms, which are essential to our defense, the rightful property of free men and formidable only to tyrannical governments. Remember that. The only people ever threatened by the citizenry that's armed and well-armed is a tyrannical government. These and other grievances were patiently borne by the people of Texas until they reached that point at which forbearance ceases to be a virtue. We then took up arms in defense of the national constitution. We appealed to our Mexican brethren for assistance, and we did get some. You know, our first vice president of Texas was a senator from the state where we have a home in Mexico State, and there were a lot of others who fought in Mexico. They rebelled in Yucatan. Remember, the Texas Navy later leased our gunboat to the people of Yucatan to fight the Mexicans to try to reestablish the constitution. But then they say our appeal has been made in vain because not enough rose up. We are therefore forced to the melancholy conclusion that the Mexican people have acquiesced in the destruction of their liberty. They surrendered because it was easier to remain fat and happy, keep your job, keep the money flowing, instead of do what you need to do. The necessity of self-preservation therefore now decrees our eternal political separation. We therefore, the delegates with plenary powers of the people of Texas in solemn convention assembled, appealing to a candid world for the necessities of our condition, do hereby resolve and declare that our political connection with the Mexican nation has forever ended, and that the people of Texas do now constitute a free, sovereign, and independent republic, and are fully invested with all rights and attributes which property belong to independent nations, and conscious of the rectitude of our intentions, we fearlessly and confidently commit the issue to the decision of the supreme arbiter of the destinies of nations, that of course being God. So that happened while the siege was happening. While this was happening, William Barrett Travis and almost 200 other defenders found themselves surrounded at Alamo Mission in San Antonio in late February of 1836. Refusing to surrender, they held off the invading armies of the Mexican dictator Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna for almost 2 weeks. The letter was written by Travis that we're all familiar with soon after the Mexicans first appeared in the area around San Antonio, and we need to listen carefully to it. Commandancy of the Alamo, Béjar, February 24, 1836. To the people of Texas and all Americans in the world, fellow citizens and compatriots, I am besieged by 1,000 or more of the Mexicans under Santa Anna. I have sustained a continual bombardment and cannonade for 24 hours and have not lost a man. The enemy has demanded surrender at discretion. Otherwise, the garrison are to be put to the sword if the fort is taken. I have answered the demand with a cannon shot, and our flag still waves proudly from the walls. I shall never surrender nor retreat. Then I call on you in the name of liberty, of patriotism, and of everything dear to the American character to come to our aid with all dispatch. The enemy is receiving reinforcements daily and will no doubt increase to 3,000 or 4,000 in 4 or 5 days. If this call is neglected, I am determined to sustain myself as long as possible and die like a soldier who never forgets what is due to his own honor and that of his country. Victory or death, William Barrett Travis. On March 6th, the courageous Texans were overrun and slaughtered by well over 2,000 Mexicans. The resulting delay of Santa Anna's eastward movement, though, gave other Texans more time to organize, both politically and militarily. Moving forward to March 10th, Sam Houston abandoned Gonzales and retreated eastward to avoid the advancing Mexican army. Panicky settlers in the area flee as well in an exodus called the Runaway Scrape. Runaway Scrape is that period in early 1836, generally beginning with the siege of the Alamo and the fall of the Alamo, ending with the fall, or beginning at that time and ending with the Battle of San Jacinto on April 21st. It is a period of terror and panic among the settlements in Texas as Santa Anna and the Mexican army swept eastward from San Antonio virtually unopposed. During the runaway, the colonists gathered a few personal possessions, abandoned their homes, and headed eastward under the most difficult conditions. Rain and cold weather during the period slowed the settlers' eastward progress along the muddy roads and trails. There was widespread hunger and sickness, and many, many died. News of Santa Anna's atrocities, some true, some distorted, added to the frenzy. On March 27th, about 350 Texas prisoners of war, including their commander, James Fannin, were executed at Goliad by order of Santa Anna. An estimated 30 Texans escaped to tell the story. Thus, we remember the Alamo and Goliad. April 21st. In a battle starting at about 4:30 p.m., that's my time of day. I don't do that early morning stuff, so Houston and I drank about the same whiskey, and we probably had slept and got up about the same time. They started at 4:30 and lasted 18 minutes. Texas troops led by Sam Houston defeated the Mexican army commanded by Santa Anna at San Jacinto near present-day Houston. Houston reports that 630 Mexican troops were killed and 730 were taken prisoner. Of the Texas troops, 9 of the force of 910 were killed or mortally wounded, and 30 were less seriously wounded. By the way, leading up to this, everyone was calling for Houston to resign and quit leading the troops. It was through fortitude that he held on because people wanted to win. They wanted to avenge. They didn't like running away and regrouping. Sometimes you have to have a little patience. On May 14th, Santa Anna and Texas Provisional President David Burnett, and it is burn it, because if you ever go to burn it, they tell you, learn it, burn it, dirt it, you know. Signed two treaties of Velasco, one public, the other secret, ending the Texas Revolution. The treaties were, however, violated by both sides. Texas independence, of course, was not recognized by Mexico, and Texas boundary was not determined until the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which ended the Mexican War, and that was signed in 1848. So we lived in a state of flux for a long time. On September 5th, of that same year. All this started several years before, but boy, it really comes to a boil when it gets going. Voters of the new republic chose their first elected officials. Sam Houston becomes president, and Antonio Lorenzo de Zavala, vice president. The voters also overwhelmingly approved a referendum requesting annexation by the United States. U.S. President Martin Van Buren refused to consider it, however, citing fear of war with Mexico and constitutional scruples, which once again just proves when you're afraid of war, you're just putting it off for a later time. The first Congress in October of that year of the Republic of Texas convened at Columbia. The Republic of Texas later the next year, starting on January 1st, was officially recognized by the United States and later by France, England, the Netherlands, and Belgium. So when you go to those countries, you say, thank you. Now I pose this question to you. Why do we memorialize and celebrate the Alamo far more than the victory on the marshy plains of San Jacinto or San Jacinto? Clearly the Alamo was a waste of manpower. It was a military disaster. And it was not even authorized by Texas top leaders. They told them to leave. Tennesseans, you know, you can't give orders. Yet to the educated, the word Alamo means so very, very much. It's easy to be successful. The act of winning is not that tough. We're more limited by our successes than we are our failures. When we win, we just keep on doing the same thing as the world changes around us. But when we lose, we are often forced into self-examination. We are tested as people. And it is always at this point where we are offered choices. We can either indulge in self-pity and excuse-making for our failure, or we can accept failure but work to become better at our tasks. We celebrate the Alamo because for the same reason that we reread the words of Travis' famous letter appealing for help, because it is a supreme example of the virtues of courage and self-sacrifice. It is in the knowing acceptance of ultimate defeat, the loss of their lives, they knew what was coming, that the men of the Alamo demonstrated to the world the supreme nobility of self-government and liberty, what has become known as the Great American Experiment. More than a century later, Barry Goldwater made it clear that the ember of Texas liberty and of the Alamo was still glowing in the hearts of some Americans when he said, "Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice." Goldwater lost. And the march of international socialism plunged ahead, with the Texan personally creating the modern, soul-destroying welfare state, and the move toward a society devoid of personal responsibility and commitment to ideals larger than our own personal entertainment or well-being. Today, when someone begins to talk of liberty or the Constitution and limits on local, state, and federal government power, they are as often scorned as they are taken seriously. What a disgusting kick in the face to the spirit of Alamo and Goliad, to the birthing spirit of Texas, and to the sacred honor due Travis, Bowie, Milam, Fannin, and so many others known and unknown who gave everything. Their sacrifice gave us the opportunity to become the most wealthy and free people in all of human history. For my part, what little I say is, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one and indivisible. Long live liberty and long live Texas.